DipYourCar.com has become world famous for the first removable, peelable automotive paint. What you need to know is that dipping, this is called dipping, it's becoming fastest trend in the automotive industry. It finally gives the average person the tool to control the appearance of their vehicle. Anything from your wheels, the emblems, the trim, the whole car can be dipped. You can change the color of your car. It's like painting your car, except you're not painting it. You're dipping it. You're putting a coat over, and when you're done, you just peel it off. It will not hurt your paint. Whatever color your car is now, you can change that color instantly. You can go on YouTube and watch the instructional video, and you can then peel it off and go back to your original color. It's going to cost you approximately about $40 to change the wheel color of your car. You can dip the entire car if you want for a few hundred bucks. Almost 500,000 people in just 3 years have dipped their cars in all countries across the world. Now, this is really fun in my neighborhood. This is where I learned about this. My neighbor did this. I'm from Oregon. We had the Oregon Ducks play in the national football game. He wanted to show his support to Oregon. Our colors out here are green and gold. He dipped his car. He had a silver vehicle. He dipped it himself in his garage. He did this himself. And on game day, he's driving a green vehicle with golded out wheels. It was super cool. I thought he had it custom painted. I did not know he did this in his own garage. And then he peels it back the very next day, goes back to his original car. It's a very cool thing. Check it out. www.dipyourcar.com.
He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on podcast1.com. And for that, you're welcome.
At long last, we are back. It is Wednesday again, which means finally, time for some enlightenment. Time for you to gain a little bit of knowledge. Time for you to follow your host blindly, without question, without correction. Do not tweet me when I contradict myself. Do not correct my facts when they're a little bit off. Follow me blindly, and your life will be better. Now, today, I got Soapalele, the Hulk. He's calling in from Australia. He got to a landline. He's calling in. He wants to be part of the show. This guy is wildly popular, and I couldn't figure out why. He's a good fighter. He's got a great attitude, but he's not getting ready to challenge for the belt anytime soon. He's a work in progress. I do think this guy might be a bit of a diamond in the rough. I think he might be a piece of coal that over time, if he can withstand the pressures, he could turn into a diamond, but he's wildly popular. And I finally just had to ask him, man, why do you have so many fans? And he said, you got to understand. He said, I'm from Australia. I'm the only Australian guy in the UFC. He said, the next closest thing is James Tahuna or Mark Hunt, but they're both actually from New Zealand. So he's got this entire country behind him, which I think is incredible when it comes to motivation. When it comes to support in anything that you do in life, you've got to have support. And it's very rare that you can get an entire nation behind you. But that's what Soa has done. He's going to be on the show later in the show. Will be somebody that most of you may think is my nemesis. And I'm talking about Mr. Blackhouse himself, Ed Soros. And he and I have had our trials and tribulations most made public, where I've got head to head with some of his guys. But the reality is, behind the scenes, I've always respected Ed. He's a smart guy. He stays the course. He knows what's part of the show versus what's reality. He knows when the red light is blinking on that camera, and he knows when you're just two guys standing around enjoying a soft drink. I'm going to have Ed Soros on later in the show. That's going to be very interesting. You're not going to want to miss Ed. Coming up next is going to be Soapalele. I'm Chael Sonnen, and for all of that, you're welcome. Onnit.com. Onnit is a based health and wellness company that focuses on inspiring peak performance through a combination of unique products, information, strategies. They're getting this stuff from leading professionals, from athletes, and from medical practitioners. Onnit has focused on creating earth-grown, nutrient-based supplements and foods, as well as unconventional fitness equipment, all based upon the latest science and research. All you have to do is go to onnit.com/chael, and you're going to get 10% off. This is for our listeners right here on Your Welcome Only. You can only get 10% off if you go to onnit.com and you put in /chael. Some of the phenomenal products that I personally use, my favorite is called Alpha Brain. It's a complete and balanced nootropic that is designed to enhance focus, mental drive, and memory. In addition, it has also been proven to increase vivid, often even lucid dreams. It's a lot of fun. I also eat the Warrior Bar. I like it because it's nothing but protein. It's only 140 calories. There's no MSG, no soy, no lactose, no nitrates. It's gluten-free. There's no crap in this. MCT oils, which are a lot of fun. They're healthy fats. You've got to have that. You have to have that in your diet. People don't understand how important having healthy fats in your diet is. These supplements are on the cutting edge of sports nutrition. I'd like to share them with you. That's why I'm giving my audience a chance to get 10% off of these products by going to onnit.com/chael. It's that simple. Head over to onnit.com/chael, C-H-A-E-L, and start strengthening your mind and body today.
This is Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
All right, in living color from Australia, as promised, Soa the Hulk Pulele. Soa, what's going on, pal?
Hey, Charles. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. What time is it out there? What time of day is it in Australia?
It's 4 o'clock. It's about 4:30 in the morning. So.
Oh, wow. I prefer not to know there's 2 4:30s in a day. My dog wakes me up pretty early for a walk, man, but not quite that early. I appreciate you getting up, buddy.
No, it's good, man. I'm always up early anyway, too. I'm hitting the gym early, so.
Now, so you're a bit of a sensation out there. I mean, those people, you've got the entire country of Australia behind you. In anything you do in life, it's good to have support. But in fighting, that's a very rare thing. You know, Conor McGregor has it with Ireland. Michael Bisping has it with England. But for Australia, you are the guy.
Yeah, me or Mark Hunt, I think. But there's a few other guys. But, you know, I've been doing it for a long time. So I've been around for a hell of a long time. So, but yeah, you know, I just keep pushing and, you know, hopefully 2015 is going to be a big year.
You know, when you come from a country like that, though, that isn't deep in a sport like MMA, where you become the guy real quickly, who do you train with out there, man? Is there a lot of gyms, or you get a group of guys together? How's that work?
No, well, I've moved my camp to AKA in Thailand. Mike Swiggs, that's his facilities over there. So, but I used to, a long time ago, do my camp at Team Quest in Temecula with Dan. So, but then I came here and did a bit of work over here, but then I quickly moved my camp over to AKA Thailand. So that's where it's at the moment. So it's awesome over there.
That Dan Henderson's a tough son of a bitch, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a funny guy. He's it was good. You know, good bunch of guys over Temecula. You know, back then was, you know, Mayhem Miller. You know, King Mo was there. Jesse Taylor. It was Soccer Joe. You know, Matt Linder come down at some point. It was a good crew there at that time. You know, but. Things change and people move on, people get old.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. You know, Dan Henderson and I's paths almost crossed in the UFC. There was talk about us getting matched up together. And, you know, he's a longtime friend and a training partner, and he's someone that I've always looked up to. And they asked me, would you fight him? I said, yeah, I want to kick his ass. I have tried to kick his ass on a daily basis you know, since about 2000, 2001. Of course I would do that match. You know, but that was just the mindset. When you come up around Dan and you mentioned Matt Lindland earlier, that's just the mindset of those guys. There's no hard feelings involved. It's just competition. I mean, there was days that I would ride to the gym with Dan. I would stay at his house. We'd go to the gym, put the gloves on, and then I'd try to give him a beating. And it rarely happened, but it didn't change the fact that I wanted to do it.
Yeah. It was funny because we were one time we were driving Dan's car. It was me and King Mo, and we were driving Dan's car. We got pulled over. And it was like, and Mo goes, "Oh, damn!" He's like, "We got two black guys in the car." So he's like, "So I went to get out because in Australia you can get out of the car and you know, and the cops will they'll be cool with it." But they drew. And they said, "Oh, get down on the ground." We're like, "What? Oh shit!"
Oh, you're kidding?
But they probably thought, "Oh, who's these two guys? Like, you know, driving, you know, a nice car."
You were driving his Range Rover, I assume.
The big car. He's a big truck. But we were on our way to his place because we were training at the back of his. He had a big cage at the back of his place. On his ranch, and that, but he was funny. Well, after we finished training, he'd just, you know, hop back. He'd just put his teeth back in, and you know, walk out. And he'd be on his tractor digging holes and stuff. But it's funny. He's a good guy.
All right. Hold on. Let's back up a sec. So the cops pull you and Mo over at gunpoint.
Yeah. Well, no. They didn't. But I went to get out because. Because in Australia, you can get out of the car, and you know, but I'm apparently in America, you got to keep your hands on the wheel, and stay in the car. So they thought, oh, you know, maybe you know, two black guys, so we had to get out of the car. And they go, "Oh, what are you doing?" I was like, "Oh shit, sorry, man, I'm from Australia.
Yeah, well, and I don't know if it's just because of two black guys. Don't forget the fact you're both huge and covered in tattoos. That's not helping your cause.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. So so that was funny, and then we like, and I was telling, you know, it was funny. It was like, yeah, that we were just because we were heading to Dan's house, so to train because we were training. It was only me and Mo, and King Mo. So it was funny. So we told Ryan about it. So Ryan Parsons. So it was funny.
Yeah, King Mo's a ton of fun, man. He is one of my favorite guys. He's just a good dude, and he's hilarious.
Yeah, oh, he's awesome to train with as well. But it's good. It was good times back then. So yeah.
All right. So you're in the heavyweight division, UFC. Do you have a next fight lined up? Do you have an opponent?
Nothing yet. Nothing yet. So hopefully, get something quick. I want to be on that Melbourne card. In Australia, that's some big talk with that. With the Melbourne card, it's going to be at Etihad Stadium, which holds 50,000 people.
Wow!
I definitely want to be on that one. So if I can get like three fights in before that card, I think it's going to be in November. You know, I'll be happy. So, but I'm not too fast though. You know, I want to make crack the top 10. So that's why I'm at AKA anyway. So, and at AKA, we sent in two Iranian guys. One of them's a top level, you know, he's a pro boxer and a top level wrestler, and he's a heavyweight. And the other guy's Amir. He's a 2-time gold medalist in Greco. We brought them over to Thailand. Plus, Thailand's got the best Thai, stand up in the world. So. With a new tie, so it's perfect for me. And plus, you've got all the other stuff that they've got there. It's awesome.
Now, when you're talking about Thailand, you said that the gym out there is Mike Swick's gym. I haven't got an update on Mike Swick in about 2 years. What's he up to?
He's been just setting up his gym. So you should see the facilities are unbelievable. It's the best facilities I've ever seen. There's one section where he's just got fully matted area. it's state-of-the-art stuff, and it's massive. And then you've got another section where it's just two boxing rings, and then it's, that's huge. Then he's got another section where it was all the cardio, all the weight area, and that's all the state-of-the-art hammer strength stuff. So it's like a wonderland when you walk in, and it's clean, and it's yeah. And they've got the, you know, once in a while they've got about like 10 Thai trainers that they do the classes and stuff. Then you've got the wrestling, and then the jiu-jitsu. They've got three. One of them is a third-degree black belt. The other two are, you know, secondary black belts. So there's three of them doing the jiu-jitsu and the no-gi and stuff. So he's definitely, you know, put in a lot of work and stuff there. So I think now, I mean, they've got the facilities now where they've got a massive cafe, and they've got the, they're just building the accommodation section as well. So it's huge. So where fighters can just stay there and train and stuff, but it's awesome, and it's cheap as well. And it's good for me because it's only like 5 hours from Australia. So from there, it's like if I was to fly to America, it'll cost me a bit. Then I've got to get an apartment. Then I've got to get transport, and it's cost. But here, just I pay $300 a month for an apartment, and then I just grab a scooter and then shoot off the training every day, quite a couple times a day. So it's really cost efficient.
Yeah, that sounds incredible, and I'm happy things are going well for Swick. He's a very good dude, and he was part of that first season of The Ultimate Fighter, helped to get everything going. But it does surprise me from a business standpoint, because Thailand's a very repressed area in terms of economics. It does surprise me that he's able to have such a big, beautiful structure. Are the Thai people migrating towards MMA and the mixed martial arts classes? Because they're not known for wrestling and boxing. They're known for Thai boxing. That's why we call it Thai boxing. They started the whole thing.
Well, it's you can't fight MMA in Thailand. You have to actually go out of Thailand to fight MMA. I think the reason why they do that is because MMA is so big, and they don't want it to take over their tradition, which their tradition is the Muay Thai. So it's their national sport. There is a lot of Thai guys that, saying that there's a Thai guy that are crossing into MMA, but there's not many, but a lot of the people that are there are from Russia, all over the world. Over there are training, there's so many people from all over the world either training at the other facilities or AKA.
Yeah, that's interesting, man. That's pretty cool to hear. I've always wanted to go out and check out Thailand. Heath Sims, who you may know from the time you were at Team Quest, he set up a little deal and doing some stuff in Singapore, and I heard it's really, really exploding over there. You know, I gotta see it though. I gotta see it with my own eyes.
Yeah, it's massive, and I contacted Heath, and I said, Heath, I might come over and do some work at your side. He said, yeah, come over anytime, but I ended up going to Thailand just to have a look. So, and then as soon as I went to the AKA, I thought, oh man, this is the shit over here. It's nice. So, yeah, I've been there ever since, and I was go back. You know, four weeks at a time to train there. And before you even train, you're sweating, so you're dropping weight. And I struggle to drop weight, but over there, I've got no problems dropping weight.
Wow. Now, so what do you weigh? What do you weigh right now, walking around?
I'm about 130 kilos.
All right, 130 kilos translate to what, about 260 pounds, 265?
265 is 120, so add on 265, about 275, 280.
Okay, 275, 280. You're in the right weight class. You're at the right weight class at heavyweight. What's the most you've ever weighed? What's the highest you've ever been?
When I first went to Temecula, I was like 310. I was like, when I went to Team Quest, I thought, I better hop on the plane and go there, and I walked in. Ryan Parsons picked me up from the airport with King Mo, and Ryan's like, "Oh damn, what the hell? What the hell you been eating?" But in the first week, I dropped 10 kilos, and then from there, and then it's. But you drop so much weight because you're just training like a beast over at Temecula. But But yeah, that's the most I've ever. Me, Mark Hunt, you know, we got to drop weight, so it's hard for us. But the thing is, we like eating. I like to eat, so especially over Christmas. But.
Yeah, man. Good. I don't blame you a bit. Good for you. Now, when you look at that heavyweight division, it's very interesting right now because we got two champions. You know, we call one the champion and one the interim champion. But I get lost when they do that. The bottom line, if a guy's got a belt, for me, he's the world champ. So, in your opinion, Cain and Verdum, you're in the division, you're in the weight class, you're in the UFC. Who's the man? And I'm not asking who you think could win. I'll get to that. Right now, I just want to know which title. Who's the champion of your division?
So Cain. Man, it's going back to Cain. Just on another level, I think. But anything can happen. It's MMA, right? Look what happened to Crocop and Gonzaga. You know. Everyone was predicting Crocop to win, then the next minute he gets knocked out. But that's anything that happened. But Cain's just, he's just got that, he's just on a different level. He's just pressures. He's got the wrestling background, and he's got stand up. And I've got told by a few people that train with Cain and at AKA that his cardio is just out of this world. He presses forward and he's just hard to deal with, you know, and especially when him and Cormier, you know, Cormier can go, you know, 2 to 3 rounds with him, and a lot of guys can only do one round with Cain, because, you know, Cain just he comes forward for that 5 minutes and just keeps coming and keeps grinding you down. So, but I think Cain, if he was to fight Verdum, I think, you know, even on the ground, I think, you know, Cain, you know, if he does go to the ground, he'll stand back up, but he'll keep in his face and then eventually, you know, you break, because and that's just a wrestler. It's just a wrestler's, you know, a wrestler's background, and wrestlers, you know, what they do, and they just, you know, break you down and keep breaking you down. So, but yeah, I think it's Cain, and it's going to be a hard one for anyone to beat Cain, because they're kind of come in and be at 100%. He's kind of reminds me of just the way you fight, because you fight and you just keep coming and you keep pressuring and you're always in the people's face. So, but yeah, but when are you fighting, Charles?
You know, and I appreciate that. I appreciate you even comparing me to Cain, because he is a very special talent, you know, in that he does stay on you. Yeah. And at heavyweight, particularly, guys, they just can't keep up with that. You know, St. Pierre was all around skilled. You know, I think he's pound for pound the best ever, unless, you know, John Jones is certainly creeping up on that. But when I would break down St. Pierre, I'm going, you know, it's not the punches, the kicks, or that big double leg. More than anything, it's his pace. He's going as hard in the 24th minute as he was in the 4th minute, and that is hard to do.
Yeah.
You know, you asked me when I'm fighting again. I'll actually tell you, and this is kind of a secret. I haven't told very many people, but I got suspended. I failed a drug test, and I don't want you letting that, like, get around. That's kind of a private matter, but that's the answer to your question. I retired, and then they went ahead and stamped that retirement for me.
Yeah.
So that's when I'm fighting again.
Well, you know, it like I said, it's... especially when you fought Anderson Silva, you just kept on coming forward. You kept on pressuring. I think with the fight against this week's fight with John Jones and Cormier, I think John Jones hasn't fought a guy like Cormier, because Cormier's he's just in your face. He'll keep coming forward, and he'll keep coming forward, not for the first round, not for the second, not the third. He'll keep coming forward, and even on the fifth round, and keep coming forward and be in your face. And if he can keep at that pace and keep going forward, eventually, you know, John Jones is going to get frustrated. And what John Jones needs to do is just keep way away from him and keep everything at a distance, especially against Cormier, because Cormier can bring it, and he's got that wrestling background that you know, that can really push the pace. And if you can't handle that fast pace, you know, you're obviously gonna lose.
Yeah.
And you did the same thing in you know, when you fought Ennis, you kept coming forward in that. In that fight, you're just unlucky, but you just kept coming forward, and and kept taking him down, eventually he just, fuck, what do you do?
Yeah, and you know, I'll tell you, one thing I had in my favor in the first fight I had with Anderson was fear. I remember having a lot of fear, which does make you a little bit quicker. It makes you have, you know, that anxiety really does keep your senses sharp. And I got met with so little resistance that the second time I fought him, I didn't have that fear. In fact, I had confidence. And for me, confidence has never helped me. I've always done better being pessimistic. I've always done better being fearful and not knowing what the outcome was going to be. The couple of times in my career I thought I had it all figured out are the times it came and bit me in the ass. And I'll tell you this, too. So the one thing with John Jones, you never know what you're going to get. If you go out and you study all of John Jones's tapes, the one thing that is unique is the fact that every fight he brings in a new weapon that we've never seen. He did a big step over with Ryan Bader that's never been done on the octagon. He caught Stephen Bonner's leg, spun into that elbow that's on every highlight reel. With Glover Teixeira, he did that weird thing where he tore Glover's arm, and later Glover came out and said that he got ligament damage from it. The oblique kick that he debuted against Rampage, and then on Monday morning we're all going to the gym practicing, kicking our opponent right above his knee. He's always doing something new. So right when you think you've got him figured out, you've studied the tape and you've come up with the little game plan that fighters like to talk about, John Jones goes and breaks something new out. That's the problem with beating the guy.
Yeah, I think Daniel can Daniel's got in a perfect position to win this fight, but if Jones was, Jones would have to just keep that distance and just and keep him away, because Daniel Cormier's got that he's been training with Cain, and he's perfect. If he does exactly what Cain does, and look when Cain fought DeSantos, he pressured him and eventually broke. It broke DeSantos down. He just kept on pressing off the cage and took him down, then got up back up. I think, and the guys at AK were saying that Cain will take you down and let you get back, but take you down. So when you think that you're up, then he takes you down again, and then he's like, oh. And that kind of takes a lot out of you, that, oh, you eventually got up, and then he takes you down again. So he kind of mind plays with you, but he's he's just on a, but you know, I can't wait for this weekend. But in saying that, when I seen your fight with Anderson Silva, I was thinking, why isn't Anderson knows that Charles is going to take him down? Why isn't he defending? But you just kept on taking him down, and you just broke him. And then at the end, you just thought, you had nothing. You had pretty much nothing. You had all the rounds won. And then he just got caught, but that was just the perfect example of a guy just in your face, and you were in his face a lot of the time. But guys just would stand off, and then that's when he starts playing with you. That was a perfect fight. I thought for you that time, but it's a bit unlucky.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. I'm flattered that you watched. It means a lot to me that it stood out in your memory, and that was pretty cool. Listen, so I know you've got a full day ahead. I know that it's approaching 5 o'clock in the morning there. You're actually starting to sound more alert and wide awake, so why don't you go throw your shoes on and get some road work in, pal?
All right, thanks, Charles.
Hey, so you're the man. I'll be in touch. Thanks, pal.
All right, peace, bye.
Soa Palele, cool guy. I didn't know it was 4:30 his time. You know, when I lined up this podcast, he just said yes. He said, sure, what's the call-in number? So I gave him the call-in number. I told him the day and time, and he never responded. He never said, oh, boy, can we push that's earlier or anything. What a great attitude. I like that. I'm still a little confused on he and King Mo. I didn't get to the bottom of that story. I still don't know if he was saying the cops pulled guns on him, or if he was saying, like making a joke, like, oh, the cop was going to pull a gun. I asked him and I re-asked him, and I never figured that out. So hopefully you guys picked up on it. But what a nice guy. You know, you don't meet a lot of nice guys in this business. You really don't. There's a reason guys become cage fighters, and niceness isn't part of it. So a Palele may have just broke the mold on that. Stick around, everybody. Quick commercial break. Make sure you listen. Buy these products. Make Chael look good. And when I come back, my nemesis, Ed Soros, will be here with us. You're welcome. New Year's resolutions. Look, everybody's got one. Okay, get in shape, be healthier, get a new job. You can do all three of those things. You can accomplish them all by becoming a certified personal trainer with the National Academy of Sports Medicine. Plus, if you don't land a job as a personal trainer within 2 months of your certification, you will get your money back. Guaranteed. It's that simple. Get a 14-day sneak peek at the National Academy of Sports Medicine's fun online program at myusatrainer.com. That's myusatrainer.com. Restrictions apply. See myusatrainer.com for all the details.
Brand new this week at PodcastOne.com, PO'd with Dennis Miller and Adam Carolla.
Awesome!
The king of all podcasts, Adam Carolla, joins forces with iconoclastic comic legend Dennis Miller.
If you're asking me whose voice most closely mirrors what's in my head, it's this cat.
Great guests, great topics, and new listeners, always welcome.
So get PO'd now. I mean, download the show now.
Always available 24/7 at PodcastOne.com.
That's PodcastOne.com. Now, back to your welcome.
Yes, thank you.
Here's Chael Sonnen.
We're back. Ed Soros, you there, buddy?
What's up, man?
You know, you got to be a little bit nervous because you never know what you're going to, you personally, you never know what you're going to get from old Chael. Is this going to be the Chael that's trying to sell tickets and is attacking Ed? Or is this going to be your buddy who you're more used to? And I want you to know right offhand that I don't know myself yet, but let's get moving along.
I'm prepared for anything.
You know, Ed, you're the man, and you're such a hard worker, and there's like no stone that isn't covered by you. How did you? But here's the one thing I don't know. How did you get your start in this business? I know you had a clothing company, but was that the first thing you did, or were you already managing guys?
No, the way I got a start in working in the mixed martial arts industry was, I had a clothing company. Before my clothing company, I was a big nightclub promoter, managed bands and did that kind of stuff. Then I started my clothing line and that kind of took off. And while I had my clothing line, I was always a big fan of mixed martial arts and I was always supporting these guys back in those days when nobody really was. So, we sponsored Chuck, and I actually was the guy who created the icicles on Chuck shorts. I'm the one that came up with that design and did all that. So the way I got actually working in the mixed martial arts business is I went with Chuck to Japan when he fought Quentin in the Pride Grand
Prix. I remember.
And at that point in time, I was friends with George, who's now my business partner, who used to have a TV show in Brazil called Passando a Guarda, which translates to Passing the Guard. So I was there, and he used to always wear my clothes on his show in Brazil, and I was in Japan, and he goes, "Hey, man, I don't have a cameraman. You want to be my cameraman this week?" And I said, "Sure." And then that whole week, I was his cameraman, just kind of filming everything, and then I asked him, I said, "Hey, who's doing your interviews for you in the U.S.?" Because I spoke Portuguese. He goes, "Oh, man, we don't have a budget to do that." And I said, "Hey, man, I'll do it. And, you know, I'm at all these events anyways. I'll do it for you." And the way I was thinking about it is like, hey, I'll sit there and I'll wear my brand while I'm doing the interviews. So I'll market my brand while I'm doing these interviews. And that's how it started. And one thing led to the next. And, you know, when I came home from Japan, I called him and I said, "Hey, man, I was thinking maybe not just doing the interviews. I'm thinking about bringing this show here to the U.S. And then I met with a local station out here in the Southern California called KDOC, which was a free channel. It was on all the TVs out here. It's in like 5.5 million homes. And I went to them. I told them what I wanted to do. We put together a deal. And actually, Sinister, which was the brand that I owned, and Tap Out, because we used to manufacture a lot for Tap Out, Sinister and Tap Out were the first sponsors of the show. And we did the show for like 13 seasons.
We Wow.
did it from the beginning of 2004 till the end of, or the beginning of 2007. We did a show every week. And that's kind of how I got into the mixed martial arts business. And then, you know, with me managing bands, it's, you know, a pretty similar formula to managing a fighter to managing a band. I mean, they both have to put asses in seats. One has to sell records and the other has to sell pay-per-view. So it was just a natural evolution to start managing the guys.
That's pretty cool. I didn't know. Who's the first guy you ever signed?
first guy I ever signed was Asuerio Silva.
Yeah, I know him.
UFC.
Junior.
Yeah. Asuerio Silva, the big heavyweight.
Yeah, they called him Junior. I didn't mean Junior DeSantis. They called him Junior at times, at least on the broadcast, whether he was or not. No, I remember him. In fact, I was on a card with him. He fought Brandon Vera. I had just fought Jeremy Horn. I was walking through the hallway, and those guys were headed to the tunnel. And I wanted to warn them, hey, it's rougher out there than it looks.
Yeah, he had a rough night that night. I think Vera submitted him with that. Guillotine.
You remember when Vera was going through his run? He had a couple of moves, but that guillotine was one. If you got caught in that, you weren't getting out.
Yeah, he had a good guillotine. I also remember one time when he fought. He was fighting at heavyweight, and he beat some guy. I think it was that Fabio Schirner. He beat him, and I remember in the interview he said he was going to be the first guy to hold a heavyweight title, and then he was going to come down and beat up Chuck Liddell.
He said it, and there was a lot of people that believed he just might be the guy to do it. You know, Dana White's one of those guys. Dana White, they ended up in a contract dispute, and Dana shelled out the money. He really believed it. And Vera had a great career. Careers are like the stock market, man. They go up, they plateau, they go down. You never know what the hell's going to happen, but good for him.
If anyone knows about that, it's you, man.
Tell you what, are you talking about my portfolio or are you talking about my fighting abilities? Now I'm confused. But they're both the same. You're right.
Well, your fighting abilities are, but you know, you definitely had some big highs and some lows. You know what I mean? I mean, if anyone could talk about that issue, it'd definitely be you, man.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that's sport. You know, and you never know when to get out. You know, that's part of it. You just never know when to get out, and you don't want to leave anything on the table. In case you do have one or two more left in you, you don't want to have that doubt. You don't want to have that regret. And as fighters, that usually doesn't end well. Fighters, we usually go out on a bad note, but we just don't know when, and you're not ready to accept it. Now, when you talk about bad notes, you got a guy coming up, Anderson Silva. He's going to be taking on Nick Diaz. Anderson's leg. I mean, come on, this is a big deal, particularly at his age. I felt that Anderson has been very candid in admitting that. He's even said, look, I'm working with a sports psychologist, and I'm dealing with it. I don't plan to throw that kick again. I found it refreshing. I love it when the real open and candid Anderson comes out, but I feel like that's what we're seeing, man. How's that leg going to hold up?
Dude, his leg is fine, man. I can tell you, it's great. He's training well. He's super motivated. I think, one thing about this sport, as all fighters know, man, it's a cruel sport. You know, it's a cruel sport. You know, the minute, you know, 1 minute everyone loves you, 1 minute everybody hates you. But at the end of the day, I think he's very focused. He's very motivated, and he's very determined to go out there and put on a good performance. But as far as his leg holding up, man, I'm seeing him kicking the bags, kicking. I mean, he's training very well. So, I think he's going to be fine.
Yeah, that's cool, man. That's inspiring. It's really inspiring when a guy comes back. And a lot of people, I get asked about Anderson a lot. And the truth is, I don't know him very well. So I'm not great at giving insight. But I can tell you, I'm still inspired by what he's doing. And people would ask me, is he ever going to fight again? And all I can do is talk about myself, would I fight again? That's the only way I can answer the question, because I don't have a line to Anderson. And my answer was no. He's been there and done that. He's achieved everything, both success-wise and from a financial standpoint. I thought there's nothing for him to gain, and that wasn't the case. And I find it inspiring, particularly to come back from an injury, particularly at his age, walk right back into a potential 5-round situation, regardless of the result. I never know what's going to happen in a fight, but regardless of the result, man, this is a cool story.
Yeah, it is an incredible story and very inspiring. And, you know, especially when you're right, he has nothing else to prove. He's kind of, you know, potentially the greatest fighter of all time, and he's done everything he has to do. But I think he still has that desire in him to fight. He's a fighter. He's always told me that he'll stop fighting when he loses his passion to fight. And I think that, you know, the way the turns that his career has taken him over the past, you know, 12 to 18 months has really kind of remotivated him and kind of stimulated him to go out there and prove to himself more than anything that he's able to do it.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. Now for Diaz, when you look at Nick, he's moving up in weight. And I get it, it's only 15 pounds, and that's not a whole lot. But speed is a factor in fighting. It's more a factor than anything else. It's more a factor than youth. It's more of a factor than strength. Speed matters in the fight game. Yeah. Power thrills and speed kills is the expression, but I believe in that too. And I think that Diaz, and I asked his brother about it, and his brother said, well, I haven't really given that any thought, but you make a good point. What I said is, look, if Nick gains that weight, he gains 15 pounds the wrong way, it can slow him down. And that's a big deal. What do you think about that? When you guys sit and study the tape, I mean, is speed going to matter here, or is Diaz still going to be as quick?
Well, I think one of Diaz's biggest advantages is his endurance and his cardio. So I think that his speed, I think Anderson's a very fast. He's Anderson's quick. I think that even at 170 pounds, I think Anderson may be quicker than Nick. Not taking anything away from Nick, but I, one thing I do know is that every time Nick comes to fight, he brings it, and it's going to be a dogfight. It doesn't matter how slow he is. It doesn't matter how quick he is. It doesn't matter how light he is. He always makes a fight out of it. So I definitely, like you said, anything can happen in a fight. The only guarantee is there is no guarantees, and that's why I think that this super fight really makes sense, because neither guy has a title. They're just going to go out there and put it all on the line.
Yeah, there it is. Right there. That's exactly right. You know, here's something that's interesting. I'm with ESPN now, Ed, and we only cover the major fights. That's ESPN's involved. Fox was different. Fox is all in on everything, but ESPN, a little more specialized as far as the MMA reach goes. We're doing it on-site, which means we're not going to Bristol, Connecticut and doing this from a studio. We're going live to location. We're not going there for Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier. We're not going for Chris Weidman versus Vitor Belfort. We're going for Anderson Silva versus Nick Diaz. That show is sold out. That show, nobody knows. That show actually sold out faster than the Cormier-Jones fight did, which is darn near a month earlier. Everybody is coming out to see Anderson Silva and see the return. And they're also coming for Nick. Now, Nick's got a whole bunch of fans, too, and the laws of supply and demand also apply to Nick Diaz. There's a high demand, and we don't get very much of him. But for that fight to sell out, which is a month later, to sell out faster than what I personally am most anticipated in my tenure in MMA, the Jones-Cormier fight, I think that is a tremendously telling sign, but I think it's also a tremendous compliment for the loyal fans that have stood by Anderson through thick and thin.
Oh, I agree. But when you look at, granted, Cormier Jones is a big title fight, Weidman versus Belfort's a big title fight, but those are title fights, and it's not the first title fight, and it's not going to be the last title fight. The difference is that this is not just a fight. This is actually an event, something that's going to go down in history. To see the sort of injury that Anderson had, and to see who he was in the sport of mixed martial arts, and to come back after an injury like that, I think it's more of an event, not just a title fight or something like that. I think it is a much bigger deal. And like I said, not taking anything away from those title holders or those title fights, but I think this is a much memorable event than anything else.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think history is going to look very fondly on this night. Not only is this a big deal today, not only will it be a big deal the night that it goes on, but I think history will look back on this night for both of these guys. Both of these guys have a meaningful place in the Hall of Fame and in mixed martial arts history. And I think that this night is going to be a bit of a crowning moment for both of them if we were to fast forward a few years. Ned, let me switch gears. Let me just go somewhere completely different. You are the president of RFA. RFA is a national mixed martial arts promotion. I run a very small regional promotion out here in Oregon. So we both understand the promoter side of things. When you hear about and you read about this lawsuit going on against the UFC claiming antitrust and claiming they have a monopoly. How do you feel about that?
You know what? I got to tell you, I mean, do they have a monopoly? That's that kind of saying, does the NFL have a monopoly because there's arena football and there's a Canadian Football League? I mean, at the end of the day, the way I look at it is the UFC is like the NFL. I look at the other organizations. I look at Bellator. No offense to them, but I look at Bellator kind of like the Canadian Football League. I look at our event, like the RFA, kind of like the college football. And then I look at the other events kind of like arena football. So as far as a monopoly, I mean, there's always they're the top dog. So I guess when you're on top, people are going to, you know, knock you for that. But I still don't see, you know, it's funny that most of these people that are in this antitrust lawsuit are guys that are no longer fighting. And it's like, you know, it's kind of like it. You know, now that it's over, now you want to complain? Well, you weren't complaining when you were there.
Yeah, and you know, I appreciate you saying that because that's how I feel too. And I try to be objective and listen to both sides, but it's kind of hard. I get frustrated in this one. Look, you're a promoter. I'm a promoter. Let's put ourselves in the UFC shoes. And a lot of the frustration is, hey, the UFC made a bunch of money, and in our opinions, they didn't pay enough of it out. All right, let's just accept that statement and stipulate that it's accurate. If I'm in the UFC shoes, okay, history lesson, they lost miserably. They were $40 million in the hole, and they were ready to sell. Yeah, exactly. That's how much they'll admit to, but they were ready to sell. Lorenzo called Dana and said, listen, get me out of this thing. I know a guy, Dan Lambert, the American Top Team, he was getting ready to buy it. So that's a true and confirmed story. So now everything changes. There's a shift in momentum, and they begin to climb out of that hole. They don't begin to make money, but they do begin to go from $40 million to $38 to $36. They begin to come the right way. Once they finally come out, okay, and I'm asking you this as a businessman, because if I'm in their shoes and I've seen the dark days, I'm going to be smart enough to know that they could come back. I'm going to be smart enough to know that I got to keep a lot of powder dry. I can't just go out and expand as big as I want to. I can't grow my PR and my marketing and my whole office. I can't start paying the fighter or anybody. I can't pay anybody. I got to keep my powder dry and leave it in there. So the UFC did start paying more money. Considerably more money, but don't they still owe it to themselves and owe it to the industry to keep some reserves for when the bad times come?
Well, here's what I say to that. You know, people tend to say, well, guys are making this, guys are making that. Well, let's go back in history and let's go back to the late 70s, early 80s, and let's take the NFL for instance. How long has the NFL been around? Guys that played in the NFL in the late 70s and early 80s, they, on the off season, were selling cars, were selling insurance, were doing that. So we have to take into consideration, first and foremost, how long have the UFC been around? Now, you could say since 1993. I don't consider it since 1993. Yes, that's when the first UFC, but I really believe the UFC really came to life in 2001 when Dana Lorenzo bought it and started sanctioning this across the United States and across the, you know, all around the world. So when I look at a sport like ours, and it's very young, you know, say 2001, it's what, 14 years old. Let's look back at other pro sports and see how much guys in the NBA were making 14 years into the league. Let's look back and see how much guys in Major League Baseball were making. They were lucky to get a free bat and glove and a bus ride to the next city to go play ball. So I think that, you know, and when you look at boxing, I mean, how long was boxing around? I mean, Muhammad Ali started making $1 million a fight in the late 60s, early 70s. But how long has boxing been around before he started making those sorts of numbers? So I just think it's very easy to point the finger now. It's real easy to say, oh, man, but they lost 40, but now look at them. Well, you know what? When they were upside down $45 million, you didn't see anybody saying, oh, man, that's a great idea. Let's keep doing it.
Right.
You know, they believed in it. They did it. And, you know, when I start seeing people complaining about how much money they make, I disagree, man. You know, but granted, you know, I have a good relationship with Dana and Lorenzo. They've always treated our guys. They've always treated us right. So I don't really have anything to complain about. And to me, I think what they're doing is the right thing. And granted, everyone always wants to make more money. I want to make more money. You want to make more money. Everyone wants to make more money. And I think that in time it will do that. But people have to understand that 14 years ago, this sport was non-existent. And now they've created not only a UFC, but they've created an industry. And how many things have spun off to become successful businesses, down to tap out to the apparel industries, to all these different industries that have came up. Look at Fox has got, you know, all this content, you know, around it. Look, it's on ESPN now. And then when you look at the other things that it's been able to do, as far as, like, when you think about expanding worldwide, I mean, people don't understand how much money that takes to, you know, people say, oh, but look how much money, you know, and the math as well. If they sell a million pay-per-views at $50 a pay-per-view, that's $50 million they're making. Well, God, I wish it was like that,
right?
Because it's not like that.
No,
you know what I mean? It doesn't work that way. And then the people tend to forget the 300 employees that they have and how many flights they have to. I mean, people have no clue. And now me being a promoter and understanding all the little expenses that come up with an event, and how, the UFC is a fine-tuned machine, and it runs very, very well. And it's successful for a reason, because they know how to run a business.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. And to your point, you know, let's say that they do a million pay-per-views and they bring in $50 million. Now, they've got all sorts of splits. You know, we're not even talking taxes. Talking, you know, you have no idea what kind of deals they have with DirecTV and Cox and Time Warner. No, nobody even knows those kind of deals. So when the money finally breaks down, let's say there is a bunch of money, and good for them. But if there's not, Ed, and here's the thing that people forget. Even the disgruntled ones, they forget this. If that money doesn't come in, the UFC still pays out. If the UFC has a deal with the guy to pay him X amount, whether it's Moonlight and Canoes or it's Dreary Skies, they're still writing those checks. And there's nobody refunding them. There's nobody saying, you know what, Dana, tonight's show didn't draw us, but give me half of this and let's call it good. That's never happened. That conversation has never happened. So these guys are responsible for paying out. It's important that, you know, you make good deals, you run your show right, you promote it correct, and that you try to earn a profit. And if that profit's huge or it's minor or it just barely gets you by, that's all fair. That's completely fair in capitalism. The bad news is you made a deal with me, guys, and if your show failed, your show failed. You owe me my money. And the UFC always pays. They always pay up. And people forget, they even did this to Big Oil. And I'm not the guy that's going to come on and defend Big Oil, but Big Oil gets in trouble too when the market's up. Everybody gets mad and hates them. So, guys, you got to study history. The market's not always up for Big Oil. They got to put some away because it goes down. All right, let me move on. The Reebok deal. I know nothing about this other than we have a deal with Reebok. You, as a manager, who a big part of your business model is to bring in those sponsorship dollars. Do you know anything more about this other than Reebok is now the sponsor of the UFC?
No, I don't. What I do know is that I knew this even before it was announced, that I do know that the majority, and when I say majority, I'm talking over 90% of the money that's coming in from this deal is going back to the athletes. So that's one thing that they've told me, and I believe them. You know what I mean? When you look at a guy like Lorenzo telling you something like that, and you could look at it and say, oh, well, yeah, but it's a $70 million deal. Well, yeah, but do you think a guy, at least me personally, I don't think a person like Lorenzo, who's a billionaire, is going to risk his reputation of just stating a lie over something like $50-60 million. I mean,
sure.
I think his reputation is worth way more than that. So, you know, when Lorenzo tells me something, I believe him. There's no reason for him to lie. And I do think in the long run, you know, and maybe I could be wrong, but I think in the long run, this is going to be good for the sport. I think that, unfortunately, the sponsorship dollars nowadays, they aren't like they once were. And I think that the people that did pay the taxes, the companies that did pay the taxes with the UFC, I almost felt that they kind of created a little like a little bit of an embargo. You know what I mean? They kind of controlled how much people were paying. I mean, you've got guys fighting on the undercard or fighting on Fight Pass that were making, you know, that the apparel companies were giving them free pairs of shorts. They weren't even giving them any money. So I think for the majority of the people, this is going to be a good thing. I think the people that are going to it's going to affect a little bit more are going to be the bigger names, the 5% of the roster who does make that big endorsement money. But on the other hand, I think that that 5% is still going to be able to get activation outside of the octagon, kind of similar to, like, you know, Shaquille O'Neal. Shaquille O'Neal was sponsored by Icy Hot, but you didn't see Icy Hot on his Laker uniform. You didn't see Icy Hot, you know what I mean? So yeah. So I think these companies, these guys who have the bigger names that have the appeal outside the octagon, I think there's still going to be opportunities out there for them. And I think that in the long run, it's going to be good because it's going to force these companies to get a lot more creative on how to activate the athletes. Because when you think of a company, any company, a Bad Boy, a Hayabusa, it's like they may think that they're genius marketing directors, but what's so genius about it? All you're saying is, here, I'll pay you X amount of money to wear a walkout shirt and walkout shorts. Now you're considered a genius of a marketing director. they're not spending any money activating these athletes.
Yeah.
So by activating these athletes, what I mean by that is outside the octagon. They're going to have, now they're not allowed to activate inside the octagon. So now if Hayabusa or a Bad Boy or a Venom or whoever is going to sponsor these guys, they're going to have to actually invest. Okay, they're paying money to have these guys be sponsored by their company. Now they're going to have to invest money on letting the world know that this athlete is being sponsored by them. So what that's going to do is hopefully they're going to that's going to transition into them for them activating them outside the traditional activation that they normally do, which is wear my walkout shirt. So that's going to hopefully have some sort of crossover where it's going to activate them in areas where they weren't being activated before, which hopefully is going to make that athlete known better in other demographics. And it's going to let our sport be known better in other demographics instead of everything. I mean, everyone that's watching the UFC already knows what Hayabusa is, already knows what Venom is. So it's not really creating any new activation. So hopefully in the long run, this is going to be a good thing for the sport because it's going to force these companies to think outside the box and be creative on how to activate their athletes.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, the Reebok deal, and I think for most people, and I'm out of the sport now, I'm not even involved, but for most people still share my opinion, which is it's really exciting. This is a really cool day, you know, that a public company as big and large and well-known as Reebok has now gotten into the MMA space. It's rare. It's groundbreaking. It's a really cool thing, but a lot of people are upset, and they're saying, well, this is just another sign of control by the UFC. And it's like, well, hold on a second, guy. Ed, there's an expression, no good deed goes unpunished. And here's the reality. Allowing fighters to have their own sponsors never should have happened. And I'm glad it did. I want everyone to make money. That's not what I'm getting at. But it never should have happened by the TV business model. There is no executive producer on the face of the planet that allows the talent that he's paying to be there to come in and get outside revenue sources. If you're paying for the TV and you're setting up the cameras, you get the money. You know, picture Saturday Night Live. Picture any movie you've ever seen. Picture the NBA. Nobody gets to walk in with a swoosh across their chest or looking like a NASCAR. Nobody. The executive producer will send you to wardrobe. He will make you change your clothes and put you in a blank shirt. If you wear a shirt that has a sponsor on it, they're not paying the talent. They're going to pay it to the production house. So the fact that we had all of those great years, and you and I both were in for that wave, and it was great, and we're thankful for it, but the reality is we never should have. There was nowhere else that we could go that would allow you to, go ahead and have your sponsors. And that's how the UFC used to be. Anything you can get, go ahead. Then finally they tighten the reins a little bit, and they go, well, you know what?
Right.
Run it past us first. We're kind of tired of seeing Condom Depot and a couple of these other things. Run it past us first. Then they had the big debacle with Affliction, and things tightened up. But as tight as things got, man, they were still loose. You and I can both say about anything we brought to the table, Mike Mersch and Dana, the guys would sign off on. So
yeah, within reason, which you know, and I'll tell you, I really think that, you know, a lot of these, and there, it's a kind of a two-way street, because that whole sponsorship thing kind of, that bubble burst, because what ended up happening was this. Like, there was a few great managers out there, but I would say the majority of them weren't really doing what they should have been doing. So what they would do is they would turn on an event on Saturday night. They would see a new sponsor, and let's just say I brought in whatever. I brought in Coca-Cola. Let's just give me a gal. I bring in Gatorade, or I bring in something, and I'm charging Gatorade what they should be paying. Then all of a sudden, these managers that aren't really that good at what they do, they'll call that same company on Monday and offer them a similar deal for 10% of what you charged them. Then that company looks back at me like I'm a crook, like I'm ripping them off. But what I charged them is what the value of it, what it should be. And then you've got, a lot of these shitty managers, excuse my language, shitty managers out there that are just whoring out their fighters and just trying to post on as many sponsors as they can. So it just, I think it waters down the product. It waters down the athlete. And to be honest with you, I'm looking forward to seeing a uniform. I think it's going to be a good thing. That's my opinion. I could be wrong. I could be sitting here 18 months from now regretting what I'm saying. But the way I'm looking at it now, I think it's the right step. And I think it's the right thing to do. And I think it's going to need a little bit of adjustments. And I think they're prepared for that. They know that this is a new. I think the UFC understands that they're going to have to make some tweaks, and they're going to try to do the best job that they can to try to make it fair for everybody. But at the end of the day, man, I think it's going to be a good thing in the long run for our sport.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, right out of the gate, it sure looks cool. You know, set the finances aside. Boy, that sure is a cool thing, and it cleans things up. You know, because this is an image thing, and we are on TV, and it does clean it up. It's very rare to have that NASCAR, looking guy out there. It's what moved our industry forward, and so good for it. But I think that it will be good, and I don't know enough about it either. But I do know, like right off the cuff, I went, man, that's pretty exciting, man. These new young guys have Reebok. I missed that wave. I retired too soon. Yeah. It sounds pretty cool. So, all right, Ed, I don't have a whole lot of time. Let me ask you a question, though. Do you have any regrets? You know, you've been on every side of this. Is there a guy you let slip away, or a guy you didn't sign you wished you would have, or a match you agreed to fight to that your guy wasn't ready? Do you have any regrets in MMA?
You know what, man? I personally, no, I really don't. I don't have any regrets on anything. I mean, as far as a guy I didn't sign, there's one guy that, to me, if there's one, thank God, most of the guys that I've ever wanted to manage, we've been able to manage. But I think one guy that, if I could go back in time and try to get him, it would be Anthony Pettis.
Sure.
I think Anthony Pettis is a stud. I think he's one of my favorite fighters to watch, and I think he's definitely one of the brightest stars that are coming up in this sport. And I think he's definitely the real deal, man. And I think that if I could go back in time and say, man, there's one guy that I'd like to get that I haven't had, it would probably be Anthony Pettis.
Yeah.
How about you, Chael? Do you have any regrets?
I don't know if I have any. I'll tell you a disappointment I have. I'll tell you a disappointment. Well, you know what? I want to finish your thought, though, real quick on Pettis. He's going to be around a long time, Ed. And the one thing that nobody's talking about, he just came off this big win over Gilbert. The one thing that everybody's missing is he was coming off an injury. You know, that fight was postponed twice because Pettis was hurt. He didn't have the world's greatest training camp. He's right at that age in life where you can just get better by getting older. But that wasn't Pettis at 100%, and he looked damn good over a tough Gilbert Melendez. Now, I will answer your question. I won't sidestep, and I don't know that I have. I mean, there's always things I would do different just in life in general. I've got a regret that I was never a soldier. I admire the United States military, but it was just at a time. And, you know, if you're going to go in the military, you kind of got to do it right out of high school. But if you're going to go into college, you kind of got to do it right out of high school. So I kind of felt I was forced to choose, but I do have a regret that I never became a soldier. My disappointment as it pertains to MMA actually had to do with the Nogueira brothers, a couple of guys that you manage. And I had made a living at after coming after guys. And I would come after the top dog. I wouldn't go pick on low-hanging fruit. I wouldn't be a bully. But I would come after the baddest dudes out there. And the guys that I came after, in large part, I didn't like. Now, whether that was justified or not is up for debate, but I didn't like them. The Nogueira brothers, I didn't know. And they came in my crosshairs. And I went after these guys very hard. Later, I got to know them. And my disappointment was what incredibly good human beings they were. And I never knew that they were. They never confronted me behind the scenes. They never said, hey, why'd you do this or why'd you do that? If they said anything, it was hello. They would shake a hand. I also, when I went to Brazil to do The Ultimate Fighter with Vanderlei,
yeah,
the love for those guys there is incredible. But to my surprise, it's not based on their MMA success. It's based on their I can never say that word, but it means giving back. Philanthropy.
Philanthropy.
Thank you. And you know, in Big Nog specifically, you know, he spent a lot of money. He's made a lot of money, but he spent a lot of it. But he didn't go blow his money. He spent it on helping the next generation and helping young kids that don't have fathers and don't have homes. I had no idea he did this stuff. As a matter of fact, our listeners may not know until they just heard me say it now. And he gives people places to live. He gives them homes. He provides them with food and training. I didn't know that.
Absolutely incredible. Both Nogueira brothers, I mean, when you really look at it, Anderson Silva is here today because of Big Nog. When Anderson Silva left Shootbox, when he was fighting in Pride, there was some stuff that happened there politically. It happened politically with Pride, and at that time with Vanderlei Silva and the Shootbox thing, that they almost boycotted Anderson from fighting. Anderson was going to go back to McDonald's and just get a job as a manager of McDonald's, where his first job was. And Nogueira basically gave him money and said, you cannot give up fighting. Move here to Rio. Start training here with us. And, you know, the reason Anderson Silva is here today is because of Nogueira. I mean, Nogueira is one of the nicest guys and most genuine, greatest guys you'll ever meet. Like, I honestly think that if anyone out there has an issue with Nogueira, you're going to what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? Because no one has an issue with this guy. This guy is a gentle giant. He's one of the nicest, most caring guys you'll ever meet in your life. I mean, the world would be a better place if there was more Nogueiras in it, for sure.
Yeah, that's been my experience too. And I'm damn sure not ready to apologize, Ed, but I am ready to acknowledge that I had that one wrong. I'll leave it at that. Hey, Ed, unless you got anything else, I'm out of here, buddy.
Hey, man, it was great talking to you, Chael, and Happy New Year.
You're a good man. Happy New Year.
All right, take care.
All right, everybody. Ed Soros, man, that guy's fascinating. You know, it's very rare that you'll meet a guy that's been on so many sides of the industry as Ed. And I would suspect that for our listeners, until I brought it up today, you probably didn't know that Ed had a clothing business. He had Sinister, and I believe he sold that to Tap Out. But at any rate, then he got into managing guys, and then he got into managing better guys, and then he got into managing championship guys. And now he started his own promotion, the RFA. It's been a good feeder program. A number of his guys go right into the UFC. It's almost a guarantee if you win the RFA championship that you will be offered a fight with the UFC. They've got a very good relationship there and some very good talent coming out of the RFA. So, Ed, you're welcome. There's your plug for RFA. And I appreciate Ed coming on. You know, he and I have traveled the road together and been on every side of the coin, and he's always been a straight guy. Always been real, real candid and very sincere. If Ed said something, you knew it was true. Whether it was something you liked to hear or wasn't, if it came out of his mouth, you could take it to the bank. I'm Chael Sonnen, and you all are very wise for listening. You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
When you're ready to buy a car, True Car is changing car buying forever. Yes, True Car helps car buyers get rid of the fear that they might overpay. Every day, True Car users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings, and True Car users save an average of $3,221 off of MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, download the True Car mobile app or go to TrueCar.com to find out what others paid for the car that you want. Then register to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. Third step is simple. Take your guaranteed savings certificate to the True Car certified dealer for a better hassle-free car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. With True Car, you can save time, save money, and never overpay. To see how much you can save on the car you want, simply download the True Car mobile app or visit TrueCar.com today.